Beast OCR proudly presents BeastNet Podcast, sponsored in part by GH Under's performance-based layers and supported by the OCR community. Here we discuss all things OCR related. Welcome to BeastNet.
Hey everybody, it's Mike here with BeastNet, and I've got Jenna Ravenscraft with me. How you doing, Jenna?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. So, give us a little bit about Jenna. Let my listeners know who you are.
So I live in Payette, Idaho, which is about 10 minutes from the actual Boise venue. And I have been in the teaching field for the last 12 years at a high school, and now I'm an athletic director in Oregon, and I coach junior college basketball at Treasure Valley Community College in Ontario, Oregon.
Nice. See, that's where I always got confused, and I thought you lived in Oregon.
Yeah, I'm right on the border. It's about 2 miles to Ontario, Oregon from my house. So,
all right. And then, so that's you personally. What are you in the Beast? I think you're like me and has some random title that I can't remember what it is, but I don't remember my own either.
Yeah, so I'm one of the Oregon or the Idaho directors, like the exact title, I'm not quite sure, but yeah. So
yeah, I'm the same one. I'm a Washington director, and Washington director. Yeah. So
yeah, I think there's a couple different terms that they use, and so it kind of just depends.
It does. It depends, and you know, some of those terms I don't think I can say on the podcast, but yeah.
Probably not.
So, what kind of fun stuff do you do with these? I mean, I know you, like I said, you're the Idaho director, but do you do anything else crazy?
Well, I've come up and done some races up there. I'm about 6 hours outside of kind of Portland. I think it's like 7.5 to Seattle area, but I've been up there for a couple different races and different things and local races up there. I've done Dirty Leprechaun this year, and I've really only been a member since last May. Funny enough, you hear their names over and over again, but I met Zane and Lorenzo, and I think you may be in Montana that year.
It might have been me.
Yeah, Lorenzo and Zane were working street team that day, and so I just happened to meet them that day. And they mentioned Beast, and then I happened to see them again when I was racing in Monterey. And since then, I've been pretty linked up.
I know, you're everywhere. I mean, you know, I've mentioned it before, you're the reason that my wife has a dry robe.
So, funny, Mallory wore my dry robe this weekend in Tahoe when I was out racing, and she's like, now I just have to have one. And I'm like,
That's what happened with Amber. She wore it at, I think, what was it, Seattle, in that nasty rain while you were racing.
Oh, yeah. Yep,
and once
that's
we finished,
the one.
She's like, yeah, you're buying me one of these. I'm like, okay.
I swear I could have sold so many dry robes for them in the past couple races.
I mean, all you have to do is really, I mean, honestly, you have to go to Seattle and just offer those people wear it.
Yep, and I was in Tahoe volunteering on Saturday since I ran on Sunday, and I took it up. I was standing on top of the mountain with it, and yeah, I could have probably sold it for lots of money that day.
No, I bet. Well, what was the weather like in Tahoe? I was here. I mean, there's the stories of 2 or 3 years ago where most people pulled off the course for hypothermia. I mean, how was it this year?
Saturday was crazy. So they opened, the swim and the dunk wall were opened that morning. For, I think until like, I want to say 10 or 11, but I could be wrong on the timeline. I have never seen people so cold in my life, because where they had it stationed is, the swim wasn't bad and the water wasn't too bad in the swim, but the dunk wall was up on the top where they had to traverse across where the wind was really ripping. And so they'd come out of the dunk wall and they had to traverse, I think it was a quarter of a mile to like 3/4 of a mile across the top and down before they got like out of the wind. And there were people that couldn't talk when they got to like where we were at. And there was over 1,000 people evac'd off the mountain on Saturday with hypothermia. So it got warmer as the day progressed, but the morning runners, when the swim and the dunk wall were open, it was bad.
And I've heard that. I mean, that's one of the things that a lot of people I mean, that's one of the things about Tahoe. I mean, and that I have always loved with Spartan. They find ways to make the terrain and the weather part of the obstacles. And
oh, absolutely.
I've always heard Tahoe, that weather will get you. I mean, it was a couple years ago. I know they had to shut down the course because it started snowing so bad. So
yeah, and I was volunteering that course, so that was the last year I was in Tahoe. I missed last year, but 2 years ago I was there and I ran Saturday and volunteered Sunday. So I volunteered the day that it got shut down, and it was really nasty. And I was almost in the same place volunteering this year, just a little bit off below the lodge, yeah.
So how was Tahoe this year?
To be honest, I was really, really kind of panicked going into Sunday after I saw how cold people were.
Yeah.
I was panicked I was going to be one of those hypothermia victims. But Sunday, they shut both of those down. They didn't really tell you. They when we started Sunday, they said, well, right now the swim is mandatory, but we are monitoring it. So it was about 3.5 miles into the course. So by the time we all got there, weather conditions they shut it down. They shut that in the dunk well, and they kept it shut down all on Sunday. So I was kind of relieved. I really wanted it shut down for the first lap because that was the one that I was worried about. I would have taken it on the second lap, but I'm glad that they heeded what happened on Saturday and decided that probably wasn't in the best interest of the racers, because I think a lot of elite and competitive racers on Saturday that were running in that coin world championship race suffered from it and had a DNF from it, because it was pretty scary.
Well, I mean, I didn't realize it was that early. I thought it was later in the race, but I mean, 3 miles in on a 13-mile course.
Yeah, and yeah. 3 miles in when it's, I don't remember what the temp was Saturday, but I know we got lucky. We thought it was going to be in the high 30s, and it was actually like 44, 45 when we took off on Sunday. So, I mean, and the wind hadn't really started ripping, and you were kind of protected down in the start line area. It was really up on the ridge where you got the majority of the wind, and the sun had come up by then, too. So we got lucky, super lucky for weather on Sunday.
And see, that's crazy to think that you're like, it's lucky it was 44 degrees.
I know. Yeah, I know.
I don't think I've read any time I've ever heard someone say, hey, we were lucky it was 44 degrees.
Yeah. Crazy us and us friends, right?
Yep. But I mean, that you know, when you're thinking about, you know, what it's like out there, I get that. But so what got you into OCR? I mean, I know you said you met the beast, you know, a few of us in May of last year, and then kind of got sucked into the whirlwind that is the beast. But what got you into the beast to begin with? Or not beast, but into OCR, the whole idea of these crazy, insane races.
So I grew up in Riggins, Idaho. I'm a California transplant, but we moved up to Riggins, and small town, and they started doing a local 5K, 10K half. It's called the Salmon River Run. My mom goes up and helps out with it, and she helps out with it now, but the first year it started, we went up and ran as a family. And it was like me, my mom, and my dad. I think my brother was working somewhere else at the time, and it was kind of like a little family run. Well, we all ran in the 5K division. Well, there wasn't, like most of the people running in the 5K that day were like walking or pushing strollers. You know, it was a fun run. Well, I ran it to run it, you know, being a competitive athlete, and I won the 5K, which by no means wasn't very fast, but, you know, it was up in Riggins, Idaho, and no one was really, you know, sprinting it or competing to win it. They were doing it for fun, you know. And so a couple of my friends were like, yeah, you should do a half marathon, you should do a 10K. And I'm like, guys, I'm not doing anything that consists of running that takes me longer than 30 minutes, because I'm just going to get bored. And I'm like, oh, well, you should try those like mud runs and fun runs that have obstacles and stuff. And then that following year was the first year that the Boise race happened. And so the same friends that we were talking about, they're like, hey, you want to do this race? Let's team up and do this race. They're like, you said you wanted to do something like this. And I was like, all right, yeah, sure. You know, it sounds like a good time. And we did it with a group, you know. Not everyone in the group was the same athletic backgrounds. Yes. So the first, my first experience was a long one, but I would say probably 5-10 minutes into it, I was hooked. I was just like, oh, this is kind of fun, you know?
Yeah.
And then you hit the obstacles, and it was like, oh, wow, this is really, really fun and kind of hard at the same time. So I played college basketball. I've played sports all my life. Like, I was right at that age range where I was looking for something to still be competitive in and be able to travel and do different things. And so it came, like, right at a great time for me. It was a weird 30 stage where you have expectations of where you should be in life and what you should have accomplished, and that gave me something to kind of like push for and find a path, I guess.
Yeah, and I get that. I did that's kind of was how I started. I did the, you know, 5Ks and half marathons and all that, but I was like, I'm bored. You get like 15 minutes into the run and you're like, hey, look, more gravel, more pavement.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is great. And then, you know, by the end of it, you know, you're not enjoying it. And that was my thing, is I got to a point where I didn't enjoy them. And I did, you know, before I got hurt the first time, I think I did 5 half marathons. And, you know, I just got to, I mean, 3 hours, which for me would be amazing to do it in 3 hours at this point. But 3 hours out there running was just boring. I'm like, I'm bored. I can only listen to my, you know, back then it was an iPod that, you know, didn't hold all that much. So it's pretty much you listen to the same, like, 15 songs over and over again while you were running, you know.
So, yep.
But you got that kind of, you know, because I'm old. Actually, I think you're the same age as me, as close. But
yeah, I was like, I think we're about the same age.
Yeah. But it was kind of one of those things, but it sounds really bad, but I'm so nerdy that I actually figured out how to, like, time myself by the music.
Oh, yeah.
Where I would put certain songs in, and I knew when a certain song came on, I'm like, I'm behind, because I should be, you know, I should be a mile, like, 7 now when this song comes on, and I'm only at 6.5, so I need to pick up the pace. And that was kind of, you know, that was my nerdiness. But it just got to a point, like, this is boring. I mean, I'm running, and yay, whoopee, but then I found OCR, and I was like, oh, I like this. So, because I'm not built like a runner. You're built more like a runner than I am. I'm built like, you know, I mean, right now I'm built like a fatty, but I'm working on that. But, I mean, even when I'm in shape, I'm still built. I've got, you know, broad shoulders, everything else. I'm not built like a runner. Runners are more sleek, and I'm not sleek. I'm built like an OCR runner where I run for a little bit and then I pick up heavy things.
There was a farmer's carry in the Ultra Loop at Tahoe this weekend, and they found like the biggest, chunkiest logs. And I, BJ, Pierce and I were pretty much most of the Ultra, we were together, and he was talking about those logs on the men's side just being excruciatingly heavy. And I passed like 2 tiny little girls on that one, because it was like they're trying to pick up one of these logs and move them, and they were, big and heavy.
Yeah.
Big and heavy.
And that's kind of it, too, and one of the other things I love about OCR is the fact that it's not just about running. You know, it's so many times, and I hope people don't get mad at me for saying this, that I've met runners that couldn't lift an extra large pizza. But they they could do a half marathon in like an hour and a half.
Yeah,
an hour,
and those runners... Yeah.
And I got to give it to them. That's awesome. I mean, it's amazing, but I want the muscle side of it, too. It's like, I want to be able to run. I know, I don't think I'm ever going to be, maybe, you know, when I get to, like, if I live to be, like, 50 or 60, when most of the other competitors die off, I might have a chance of, like, you know, winning age group or something. But I know I can at least do some of the obstacles with the heavy. Like, I mean, for me, it's like the Herc-hoist. Most people have to sit down. I just reach up and grab it and pull. I mean... I have the muscle mass, but I need to work on the, like, being able to run too. So
yeah, that was another case in Tahoe this weekend. I think it was a husband and wife, and we were on our second lap approaching the Herc-hoist, and I was talking to, I think it was BJ, so, and about how I passed like 3 girls at the Herc-hoist, because they're these tiny little fast runners, and couldn't even move the bag. And one of this girl next to me was like, yeah, that was me. I couldn't get it. I couldn't move it. She's like, my hands were just too cold. And so we approached this one again, and they had run up in front of us. And I went around to a different side, and she's struggling with this and struggling with it. And I kind of cheered her on before I went to the other side, and then just went to the other side. Well, I ended up with a lighter one, or I thought was a lighter one, and she had given up and walked over to where the burpees were at. And I was like, no. I was like, hey, don't start your burpees. Come over here and try this bag. She's like, no. I'm like, come over here and try this one. I'm pretty sure it's lighter than the one that you're just on. Lean back into it. So she came over, and she kind of got it moving and got it stuck about the same spot that she got the other one stuck. And we just kind of kept talking to her and kept encouraging her, and she got it at the last, you know, a couple pulls of it. But I don't, with the whole burpee penalty, you know, that those runners that can't do those strength ones will just run up to it, touch it, and go do their burpees and take off running again. So it's the disadvantage of that, you know, deal of it.
That's what like it is. Killing. I mean, yeah, it's a complete disadvantage, but you know.
Yeah. And there's talk about Robert Killian. He was, I think, in first when he got to the tire flip on Saturday. And he was struggling with it because it was on concrete. So to get your hands underneath it, like, you had to find a crack or something like that. And he wouldn't burpee out of it. So I think I wasn't down there, obviously, but I think that's kind of what I heard was he basically wouldn't burpee out of it and kept trying until he got that tire, and it cost him a couple places. So, but I mean, that's what it should be about, right? Not just, oh, I can't do it. I'm going to touch it and go over here and do my burpees. Like, give it an effort, right?
And see, for me, that's a real competitor. That's someone who's like, I can't do this. I'm going to keep doing it till I can. And I mean, it's one of the things I've said a lot of times, like, where I need to get in better shape, but a lot of times I will cheer for people that are more in my instance, because it sounds really bad, but it takes a lot more for them to get off the couch, you know, because, and I, like I said, I hate to say it, everyone has their own battles that they're up against, but I always just feel like, you know, most athletes, it's like, cool, hey, this is another cool idea, let's go do it. Where there's people that are, you know, in my situation now, luckily, I think if I hadn't done this before I started gaining the weight and got injured, you know, I don't think I would start now. But it's one of those, I'm already doing it, so I might as well just keep doing it and find a way to get healthy again so I can keep doing it the right way. But for someone like, you know, my size, to get off the couch and go do it, those are the ones that I'll be out there cheering, trying to help. And I mean, I'll help anybody. You know me. I'm one of those. You need help?
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Let's go for it. You know, and but I do see a lot of times, I've seen the Hercules where I've walked up and there's some guy that, you know, is fast and quick and can't even lift the bags. He's trying to get them up and, you know, I'm like up and down and dropped it and ready to go. And I'm like, dude, do you need a hand? Like, do you need a hand doing this? You know, or, you know, they're getting ready to go there with burpees. It's like, come on, let's, like you said, let's try and get this and get this together and see what we can do. And I've seen a lot of them when it comes to those strength obstacles, that's where it becomes, where you see people like, you know, that are built different, like you and, you know, Lorenzo and some of those, you know what the obstacles are, you've trained for them. So you're a runner, but at the same time, you've got the muscle to do everything else, you know, where you see a lot of the runners, and I've seen a lot of them that are like, oh, I'm a runner, I can do this. And then they get out there and they're like, oh, this isn't what I thought it was.
Yeah, and then you have Spartan starting to put a lot more. I mean, they've always kind of put a couple obstacles back to back, you know, where they have one, two, or three, or it's grip strength, or, you know, something like that. Now you're seeing like seven obstacles back to back, or within a half mile, you know. Coming into the gauntlet in Tahoe, you came down off the mountain and you had Olympus. Then you went around the corner to rope climb. Yeah. Then you ran around the corner and up the stairs to Tyro. Then right next to Tyro was Ape Hanger. Then right past Ape Hanger was Tire Flip. Then past Tire Flip was Monkey with a Twist. All probably within a half mile. So you put things like that.
And your hands didn't work.
Yeah, and I failed Ape Hanger both days because it was right after Tyro. I was gassed from Tyro.
Yeah.
But I failed it both laps.
I'm not sure if I like the way they've started stacking them like that. I mean, I like Montana, because the cool thing about Montana, they're stacked, but they're stacked in a way that you hit like two or three, and then you go way up the mountain, and then you go like for a mile and a half, and then suddenly you come back, hit two more, and then go back up the mountain, and then come back down. They're all stacked right next to each other, but they're really like a mile or so apart from each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And you it's know, a world championship course, so I mean, yeah. You expect a certain, you know, harder level to it.
And part of it too is, I mean, not to sound bad, they're going to do it. And I've seen them do it at Seattle last year when they had the world championship course. If you remember, there was, it had been what, like 10 obstacles that you could see from the, like, from festival. And it was pretty much that way this year, where you could pretty much like stand in the middle of festival and turn in that 360 and see so many obstacles so that you can, and there seems like they try to do that more, where you can see a lot of them from festival. So, you know, you get more spectators, because it's one of those things, you know, I've always heard people say, why am I going to pay $25 to go see vendors when you can't see anything?
Yep. Yep. And it's totally, you know, it's great marketing play for them, because they will get more people there to watch when people can see more. And they are trying to base that around of, you know, that spectator course, like how can you get to it? Tahoe's a perfect place for them, because you can take the tram up, they had tons of, you know, visible obstacles down there. So,
in one of these years, I got to get up there. I know the one place that's horrible for that is Hawaii. Hawaii, you can't see. It's like the last three obstacles they have like stacked up every year, and those are the only ones you can see from festival. That's it. You like come around a corner and there's three obstacles, and then you're done. They tried to do it a little bit more last year. This year, I don't know because of stupid lane, but yeah.
Yeah, I totally want to do Hawaii, and there's a bunch of us kind of playing around with it for next year, and I talked to one of the West Coast crew, and I was like, you guys going to still do Hawaii? And he's like, oh yeah. He's like, that won't stop us from doing it. I'm like, dang.
They need to announce when it's going to be, though, because I know a lot of people
want to do it,
but, like, Justin Wiley's worried because he has to, like, in the first week of November, he has to ask for his time off. For next year, the whole next year. So
well,
he's
they
like,
usually
I
do
know.
It like a month after.
It's moved though. Yeah, they usually it's about a month after they announce it, but they keep every year. It's moved by like a weekend or two.
Mm-hmm. I know it used like, to be on my birthday weekend, and I was really hoping it was going to stay on my birthday weekend.
Because I know a couple years ago, me and Amber went. Like we left 2 years ago. We left right after, like the day after Amber's birthday, which is the end of July. So it was the first weekend. It was like the first weekend in August because it was before Washougal.
Yep.
Then this year it was like two weekends after Washougal. It was like the last, you know, weekend of the month. So it's like you can't even like think, okay, let's just take this 2 week block and it should be somewhere in there. It could be, you know, it's usually sometime in the month of August and that's all you know.
Yeah, but see, they did that with Washougal this year, right? Like, they had Washougal, and they put it, like, 2 weeks or 3 weeks, like, almost to the end of August, and then they changed it back to the same weekend that it's been on.
Yeah.
So just never know.
They're probably trying to keep it not so close to Seattle, because as it was, and I was doing this, figuring it in my head, if I had done Hawaii, I would have ended up doing, what was it, 6 races in a month. Because I would have done Washougal. 2 weeks later, I would have done all 3 races in Hawaii, and then it was like 2 weeks after that was 2 races in Seattle.
Yep.
And I ended up, you know, not doing anything in Hawaii, but...
But it was a good time.
It was a blast. And that was what everyone kept telling me. They're like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry you can't race. I'm like, you realize I'm still in Hawaii, right? I don't know why you're sorry that I'm in Hawaii, but... You know,
yeah, if you're going to go somewhere where they cancel a race, man, what better place to be than Hawaii for that one?
Like, and everyone's like, oh my gosh, are you okay? Is everything okay over there? And I'm sending pictures of the like gorgeous sunsets and going, yeah, it's perfectly fine, you know. There was a random picture of Amber looking like she's getting run away, you know, taken away by a wave, but yeah, that ended up on MSN and Yahoo and Google and everything, and we're getting messages, oh my God, are you guys okay? We're like, what are you talking about?
So good, though. So good.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was a blast. I mean, it was awesome. I love going to Hawaii. So, we're definitely going to do it again next year because it's become my white whale. I need to finish all 3 of those races. It's like in my head now that I have to do those. That's like number one on my bucket list now, is all three of those races in a weekend. Because it's a gorgeous course. And the one thing is, too, is anyone who tells you that that beast course is easy has never done it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I know Lorenzo and Zane did the ultra there, and I mean, they'll tell you, it's there's nothing easy about it. It's a brutal
hot
up and down.
And humid and taking naps.
Yeah.
Zane told me he would take a nap every so often.
Yeah.
It's hot.
I was one of those. I was literally like, anytime we found water, I was climbing into it, like trying to get my body to cool down. So that's like one of the things me and Benton have been going to the gym in mornings before work.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I've started doing is I go into the sauna where it's 180 degrees and humid and figure, if I can handle this for a while and kind of I'll pace and walk around so I'm not sitting just to kind of, not enough to get my heart rate and make it dangerous, but just enough that, you know, if I can breathe in this, then I should be able to breathe in Hawaii, because that was my biggest problem in Hawaii is trying to breathe. It's amazing how much that heat and humidity can take the breath out of you. So,
I have family that live on the East Coast or towards the East Coast, like, and I've gone out there. Cousins gotten married in the past few years, and I've done training runs out there. And it's like, it's not very hot there, but you add the humidity in there, and I'm sweating, completely soaked, like, red-faced, felt like I ran 15 miles. I did two.
Yeah, and it's a whole different thing, and that's the hardest part about Hawaii is training for, you know, when we live in Washington, is training for that hot, humid nastiness. So, yeah, you guys should definitely do Hawaii with us. I know right now, so far, Serena and Justin, Justin Wiley have said they're going. We're going to have our little Team Turtle to get going. So, because we want all three. I mean, right now, I'm on hiatus from racing. I've got one more race next weekend, I think. Is it next weekend? Yeah, next weekend in the terrain race in Vancouver.
Oh, nice.
And then I'm done until March. So I'm like, okay, this is my time to hit the gym, start swimming, start doing all that stuff, and get my body back to where it should be before I start racing in March. I haven't trained correctly over the last 2 years since my foot injury. I've used that as an excuse, and I haven't trained correctly. I haven't been getting back in the way I should be, and it's caused me to get injured multiple times now. Like 2017 and 18, I've had, both times in Montana I got injured, both pulls in my arms, and part of it was trying to basically hang my body weight, which is way too much, on my arms, and it's hurt my arms, so I've had a couple injuries that way, and I'm trying to like give the next few months no OCRs and let those all heal and get, drop some of this weight so that I can really come back strong. So
March is a good month to come back. That's pretty much, I think, when my race season will start again next year is March, because in all honesty, I roll into basketball. So we're in basketball right now. So, two a day and a lot of stuff, and I have two races left on this calendar year before I roll into next year, and it's nice that it's kind of a down season then.
Yeah, so you should come down to Vegas and hang out with us in Vegas in March.
That's the issue is that's always like right during our championships.
Yeah.
And so I actually went to Vegas 2 years ago because it was like I didn't book tickets, but I was going to drive because I wasn't sure if we would have made, if we wouldn't have made playoffs on the instance, and we would have done a play-in game, I was going to be gone. Or it was like if we would have made the championship series, I would have been gone.
Yeah.
So we didn't. So I ended up driving down. But this past year, we were right in the thick of things, so I had to miss it.
Yeah, because last year was really good. I mean, I don't know if you've heard me talk about it. If you did it 2 years ago, the Riverwalk, right?
Yeah.
Where you go downstream and through it and everything.
And that was right at the beginning of the race, too.
Yeah, Hammond took the course and flipped it over. He reversed the entire thing. Like,
which is
it was
good,
because
you got that 5 miles of sand running out of the way first.
Yeah, so it was almost the exact same course, but backwards. And you ended up hitting that, the Riverwalk almost at the end, and it was all upstream.
Oh, yeah.
And going upstream, and I'd never really done it and thought about it, but the way that water is, it's just deep enough that, you know, at my height, I can't lift my legs out of the water. So you're drowning. So you got about halfway through it, and my quads were on fire, and I'm like, holy cow. I'm like, I need to have to go find a river and just walk up it every day. Ooh, yeah, that was brutal.
Yeah, I grew up on a river, and so in Riggins, we had the salmon running through there, and the little salmon, so we go fishing and walk up rivers, and even in, like, shin-deep water, like, that's tough. Even if it's not flowing, like, fast, if it just looks like it's meandering, it's still way good training.
Yeah, it is. So, all right, let's take a quick break for commercial, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
Grays Harbor Unders makes the performance-based layer clothing you want and need. Whether you work, hunt, hike, fish, run, or ride in the great outdoors, if you work up a sweat, Grays Harbor Unders are for you because their unique dual-layer fabric removes moisture from your body and keeps your skin dry, even when the outer layer is completely wet. It's a base layer like no other. Get you some at ghunders.com. That's ghunders.com for the best performance-based layer you'll ever wear.
All right, we're back from commercial. So, like we're talking about, you know, the river is a crazy one, and that's kind of one of the things I think that was a little bit of my motivation for trying to swim and do that kind of stuff because of my foot injury, because it was a great workout, but it wasn't high impact on my foot. And that's what I've been trying to get, is that not high impact on my foot, because it's like I've said on the podcast before, every time I've lost weight and got down back to where I should be, it was running, was my cardio. And now I can't do that, because when I run, that's where the hurt is. So I'll run for a little bit, then I get frustrated because I'm in pain and it hurts too much to move. And then I'm like, okay, forget it, I'm done. And then I just gain more weight. So it's like, okay, time to replan. You know, the swimming, lift weights, I figured out, because I'm not that good of a swimmer, that what I actually do is I'll get on, they have a weird, it's called the stride. It's a weird, it's not an elliptical, but it's not a treadmill. It's called the stride runner or something. I don't know. It's really weird. Uh-huh. But there's no impact on my foot, but I can get a good stride and get a good workout. So I'll do that for like half an hour, and then I'll go jump in the pool, swim a couple laps in the pool, and then go in the sauna for a couple minutes to kind of get that breathing, and then take a shower and go to work. So that's
and
part
it's
part of my
so useful.
Yeah. And I figure if I can do that, get that cardio down, and then I'll start putting in lifting and stuff like that later. So right now I'm more worried about the cardio than lifting. So I know I can lift heavy things. I'm not worried about that yet.
Yeah. That's the great thing about, you know, our muscular strength is, I remember at the end of last season, I took like 2 weeks off, like 2 weeks of nothing, like no running, no lifting, nothing. And I'm like, I'm going to get back in the gym and be like weaker, right? Because I haven't done anything for 2 weeks. Like I could still lift the same amount of times.
Yeah.
So I was like, wow, you can go 2 weeks without, you know, doing this and still maintain it. But with your cardio, 3 days and you're already starting to lose it. So if you can bike when you're injured, if you can elliptical when you're injured, if you can swim, you can do any of that non-lower leg, if it's a lower leg thing, it's really beneficial.
And, you know, that's one of the things. I mean, I've said it a few times on the podcast. My biggest mistake was when I broke my foot was I felt like, it sounds bad, but I felt like I was still doing the Spartans. I mean, I took that time off, the 8 weeks, because my foot, I couldn't even put weight on it for 8 weeks. But I took that time off, but the second the doctor said I could walk on it, I was in Hawaii doing Spartan races.
Yep.
So I'm like, I'm fine, you know, I'm still working out, I'm doing stuff, but I wasn't really working out. I wasn't getting the cardio. All I did was the Spartan races and nothing in between. And then, you know, once it was healed, you know, I could take it off, I could wear a shoe again, all that stuff. Then I'm worried that I don't want to run. I don't want to do anything too impactful because I don't want to break it again. So I'm taking it easy. And I did like nothing the whole winter until all of a sudden I went to Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then I did Vegas and I'm like, oh my God, why am I so out of shape? Well, oh, hey, you know, almost a year sitting on your butt. What do you expect? You know? And then it just became a vicious cycle, and it became, you know, it just compounded on itself. You know, I did Vegas, and then I'm worn out because I did Vegas, and I'm trying to recover from that, so I don't do a whole lot. And then I do Seattle, and then I hurt myself in Montana, so I take it easy.
Yeah.
I have an arm injury, you know, so now my foot's hurt and my arm's hurt. Better lay on the couch and eat potato chips, you know. I mean, so
potato chips are good, but
yeah. It was a lot of bad decisions on my part. And now it's kind of, you know, I'm at that point where I'm like, okay, it's, you know, it's like the old saying, you know, sink or swim. I mean, either I need to actually start doing what I say I'm going to do and drop the weight or give up. And I'm not one to give
up. You're not going to give up.
So,
it's like, yeah, you're not going to give up.
Yeah, I'm not one to give up. So I'm putting together a plan. I've got, you know, the 16-year-old keeping me accountable and going to the gym in the morning. Yeah, so I've got a plan to do it. I've actually got, amazingly enough, people will be surprised, I have a physical scheduled for October 17th so that I can talk to my doctor and see if there's a few things, you know. I think part of my problem is sleep, and I'm going to look at that. So I'm going to get this figured out, and I think I'm hoping next year I'm going to come back a new man, so.
Oh, you're gonna come back, because it, like you said, you're at that sink or swim portion of it where you've talked about it and talked about it, but now it's like, yeah, there's got to be some sort of movement to change at this point, because you're kind of fed up with it, you know. And people finally get to that point.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and it's time. I need to get back, and it's like one of those things. I keep looking at, you know, old pictures of myself when I was skinny and ripped, and I'm like, but I still wasn't healthy. I mean, I was skinny and I was ripped, but I was skinny because of all the other bad things that was going into my system.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you know what I mean. But that's why I was skinny, and I was ripped because I did have a lot of habits that I did that were fun, that were good. I mean, I played racquetball, tennis, mountain biking, all that crazy stuff. So I had those hobbies, but I had other things, you know, I smoked, I did everything else and put bad things into my body that, you know, weren't good for it. So I want to get to that point where I'm healthy and fit, not just one or the other. And that's kind of my problem. I've kind of been one or the other most of my life. And I want to get to that point where there's a good balance between healthy and fit. So
yeah. And now we have so many more opportunities, you know, to become healthy and fit versus, you know, 10, 20 years ago when a lot of the stuff that's available now wasn't even thought of, you know.
Yeah. Hey, but sometimes it's hard to get through the, well, I don't know a better way to say this, but the bull crap of what really is good for you. There's so many of these products online that are like, ooh, take this and it'll help you lose weight and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, there's no magic pill. It's either do the hard work or be fat. I mean, is that bad?
Well,
that's a bad way to say it, but, you know.
No, it's not a bad way. And our generation, generation, but the generations that are coming up, like, no one wants to have to work hard for things, right? They want that shortcut. Like, give me that magic pill.
Our generation is the bad, too. Not as bad as the one coming out, but our generation kind of started it with the, hey, you know, take the Herbalife or whatever. And, I mean, not the bag on Herbalife. I mean, it might be great. I don't know. But it's all these fad diets. I mean, you know, Atkins, everything else. I mean, it's like, some of them seem great, but then all you read farther into them, and it's like, cool, it looks like you're going to lose weight, but to retain that is the problem. And there's a lot of them that you see that you could drop the weight, and you can drop it fast, but you're not going to retain that weight loss. You know?
Yeah.
It's like a lot of the cleanses I see. Ooh, I'm going to do a cleanse and drop 15 pounds. Well, you just dropped 15 pounds of, like, water weight that you're going to gain back in, like, 2 weeks.
Yep. It's lifestyle changes that are the ones that are beneficial and the ones that will stick with it, you know? And that's what people don't want to work for, you know? They want to take that magic pill. They want to take pills on a regular basis. But, you know, you teach diet, nutrition, and exercise, and you change the habits that got you there in the first place, and the success rate's going to go up. But, you know, that also takes time. That also takes determination. That also takes dedication. It's a mind thing.
And that's what I'm trying to find out. Because, I mean, the one thing is, I've talked about, you know, 10 years ago, I went from 270 down to 190. And it was probably about 9 months. And a lot of it was diet. You know, I went from, my biggest thing was, I ate dinner. And that was it. I didn't eat breakfast.
Yeah.
most of them, I didn't have time. I didn't stop and take a lunch. I just worked. And I would go eat dinner. And that was it. But when I ate dinner, I ate like three dinners. I'd eat enough for like three people. And just, you know, just chow at dinner. And, you know, I went to a dietitian. Dietitian's like, that's horrible for you. She's like, your body's basically in starvation mode all the time. So it's storing all the fat. And then all of a sudden you're eating this huge meal. It's like, it's not healthy. Yep. She's like, you probably eat more than that throughout the day if you ate it every 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay. So I made a plan. And I, at that time, I had an office job where I sat in my office all day. And I made a plan where every 3 hours I had snacks that were healthy snacks in my desk drawer. And then I had stuff in the fridge so I could make sandwiches or something like that, healthy foods, you know, salads, whatever, in the fridge for lunch. And that's what I did. I started eating every 3 hours. When I got up, I had like a yogurt or a banana or something simple. And then, you know, every 3 hours I had something. Just not something bad. It was usually a healthy snack. And then at lunch, we had a gym in the office downstairs, and I'd go run for half an hour. And I dropped like 80 pounds in 9 months.
Dang.
And I was doing great. I loved it. I was feeling healthier than ever. It was amazing. And then I blew my knee.
Yeah.
And of course, and that's the hard part a lot of people don't talk about is the depression that comes with that. You've worked so hard. Now your knee's screwed up. So you do exactly what I just said. You sit on the couch, you eat potato chips, and you cry about the fact that you're all messed up again. And then you gain all the weight back. And it's bad decision making. You know, it's really what it comes down to. It's like, okay, I had that. You know, that plan down and had the habits down, and it took one little injury to change it. And that's the hardest thing, I think, for people to get past is that how do you deal with that injury?
Yep.
How do you continue to do what you were doing, but now you can't run because your knee's screwed up? You know, and I think that's where the hardest part for me has been is when I get hurt, I have that bad habit of, well, I'm screwed, and I give up. And that's what I need to work on is not doing that. Have you ever had that where you've had that major injury or just an injury enough that just kind of like, bleh, and you're just like, I'm done?
Yeah, the funny thing, so I played, you know, 2 years of college basketball, and then I played some college lacrosse for our club team at Boise State, and then I coached it. So I did, you know, multiple years of all of these different, like, super competitive sports. I tore my MCL, like, the last three games of my basketball season. Well, it wasn't a super big deal. I didn't play a whole lot. It was the end of the season. We were terrible. You know, yeah. I never got it fixed because I never went to see a doctor on it. Not that big of a deal. But then I'm playing rec league basketball, and I roll my ankle really good. I know the difference between, like, a sprain and something more significant. Like, I heard it crack. Like, I felt the way that it went. It ballooned up instantly. I knew I probably broke it. I went to the emergency room. They looked at it. They're like, nah, it's just a really good sprain. Walk it off. You know, I'm like, well, I can't walk, so you're going to probably need to give me some stuff. Like, they're like, here's an air cast. I'm like, probably going to need some crutches. They give me some crutches, and they call me back the next day, and they're like, oh, yeah, you rolled this high ankle sprain with such force that you pulled a fleck of bone off that the original person that read the x-ray didn't see. So our x-ray tech came in this morning saw it. So come on back and get a boot. All right, come back, you know, get a boot. And they're like, you need to see an orthopedic. Go and see an orthopedic. They put me in a cast. Then I develop a blood clot in my cast. Then I have to be on blood thinner. So, like, this whole thing that was just like a sprained ankle / fracture that should have been over in 6 weeks ends up being like a year-long thing. And yeah. Anyone that's ever been on blood thinners, like, they totally mess with your entire system. Yeah. I mean, you're thinking blood just messes with blood. Well, it thins your blood, which means to keep you hydrated. Less oxygen to keep you hydrated. So I had, like, headaches for a year straight. And then you're talking about someone that's pretty, like, active, going out. A bruise can be death with people on blood thinners. Like, if you... Yeah. have something with enough of an impact, it can cause internal bleeding. So I had to have, like, medical alert bracelet on. And, yeah, I went through that whole depression phase. I'm like, well, fine. If I'm just going to get injured and I'm just going to have to do this, I'm just going to stay home. That's stupid. And
yeah,
I can make it through all these years of doing all this other stuff and playing stupid city league basketball, and some girl steps over to roll my ankle and blah, blah, blah. It took about 2 or 3 months for me to like snap out of that and stop feeling sorry for myself and just continue on. So yeah, I get it. It's demoralizing. And at some point you either, that's another make it or break it. You either decide, hey, I'm going to live like this for the rest of my life because I just don't care anymore, or no, this isn't who you are. Get your crap together and get going.
Yeah, exactly. So was there anything that like defined that like made you say, I need to get my crap together and get going, or was it just kind of, it just kind of happened?
It was actually like my first year that I'd started teaching. So I was actually commuting back and forth. I lived in Meridian at the time, and so it was about a 40-minute commute. And I was coaching two sports that year over here. And when you're in that position where you're a high school teacher and a coach or a college coach, and there's an age separation, you know, even in my current position now where I'm an athletic director at the high school that I'm at, and I don't teach these kids and I don't have these kids in class, they're still, kids look up to you, right? They see what you do, and it's a lead by example thing. So I don't know if I would have been working in a different field if that would have been the wake up, and I would have actually like heeded that and been like, hey, you know, this is the example, you know, you're going to have a lot of kids that, and I've had a lot of kids that have had injuries. I've had kids that have torn their ACL and been out for an entire season, you know, and can't play. And had a kid with multiple concussions that she could be playing her senior year in at a 4-year school this year, but because she sustained so many concussions, they decided that it's better for her not to play. And now she's a grad assistant coach. So showing them that, you know, you can persevere through, you know, these minor setbacks and they don't define you is important. And I don't know if everyone will ever have that experience, you know.
I don't know. I mean, that's kind of the thing. I think it's something different for everyone. Because, for me, I think one of the things that finally did it for me was kind of the same thing, but it was my kid. You know, looking at my kid doing, you know, Benton did his trifecta this year, you know.
Yeah.
And doing that with him and realizing that I was what was slowing him down. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
He could have done those races so much faster if I wasn't with him. And that bothers me a lot. That I'm, you know, which you want your kids to be better than you. But it just, I'm a competitive person, but it's not just even the competitive. It's the fact that I was moving so slow that he could have just left me and went. And he probably should have. But, you know, it's kind of one of those, it hurt me, you know, to know that I was the reason that he didn't finish any faster than he did. And it's like, I need to fix that next year.
That was the slap in the face you were waiting for.
Yeah. You know, I need to make sure that next year I'm competing with him, you know?
Yeah.
Not that I want to beat him, but, and it sounds bad because me and Ben have this kind of crazy thing because we do a 5K every month as a family, at least a 5K every month as a family. You know, whether it's just a stupid little, you know, road 5K or whatever, but we do it together. And it's almost always at the end of it, me and Benton will take off. And unfortunately for Amber, leave Amber behind and just sprint for it to see who can be, you know, who can get to the end faster. And most of the time, it's a pretty even competition. But it's been getting more and more where it's not, you know. I can still sprint really good for a couple like 30 feet, but you know, he's finally getting to that point where he's getting athletic enough that I can't keep up with him. So I need to get better and get, you know, so I can keep up with him and, you know, give him at least a challenge. So
yeah. It's funny you talk about you and your son. My dad's going to finish his first trifecta in Sacramento. And it's going to be 2 days before he turns 70.
He's still young, Jimmy.
Yeah, and he's going to run age group in Sacramento, so he's really been putting in the work lately. But we've always competed. And there's certain things he's always, like, beat me at, and there's certain things now that I beat him at, and it's still that, it's 100% still that competitive thing where it's hilarious, even the smallest things. Like, he's a big pool player, big ping pong player.
Yeah.
You know, it could be something as simple as dominoes with the family, and it's an all-out war in our family, and it is so fun.
But that still makes it fun.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. So who wins the dominoes?
Oh, it's kind of, I don't know. We've all gone back and forth. Yeah, it's really funny because we've always played dominoes on New Year's. Like, it's been a New Year's celebration thing for, like, years and years and years. And it's always the whole family. Like, my grandpa passed away several years ago, but, you know, he was, like, the biggest trash talker of them all. And my grandma, she's a pretty big trash talker as well. So, yeah, there was always very appropriate language and a lot of competitive behavior and dominoes. And it kind of went around the table, actually. Like, it's pretty evened out as far as who gets the wins and who gets the losses.
Yeah, see, my family was always cribbage.
And, yeah, my grandpa was a big cribbage guy, too. No one else really in the family. Like, he kind of taught us grandkids, and not. I have, like, all of his old cribbage boards. Some of us grandkids do, but yeah, big time. Good cribbage player.
Yeah, that was kind of, in my family, that was, like, when I was a kid, I remember that's pretty much how my mom taught me how to count, was playing cribbage.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I've been playing cribbage since I was, like, you know, knee-high to a grasshopper, but, you know, as they say, but, I mean, that's always been my game, and that was, like, one of the things I taught, you know, the kids and Amber, but usually me and Amber are the only ones that play cribbage. Yeah. Me and Ben, we get on actually the like PS4 and we'll play Overwatch and those fun like war games and play against each other. So, it's good. You know, it's good to be competitive with the family. I mean, it's, you know, as long as you don't take it too far. But
oh yeah, there's always a lot of trash talking on all different levels, and my dad still trash talks me and racing, and he knows, like, he knows I go all over, and I'm relatively competitive, but he's always like, well, just try and catch me, or you better get moving, because I'm coming for you. And I'm like, yeah.
Well, how many races did you do this year?
I did a train race, Dirty Leprechaun, and Cosmo, outside of all the Spartan races, and then I think I have 5 sprints. I think I'll end with 4 supers in Sacramento and Montana Beast. I failed the Kimberly Ultra, or DNF the Kimberly Ultra, successful in the Tahoe Ultra, and then I have the Dallas Ultra in like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
It's pretty good calendar season for me, for sure.
Yeah. Then you usually hang out with those troublemakers, Zane and Lorenzo, so.
Yeah. I travel with the Wolf Pack a bit.
Yep. They're troublemakers, but they're lovable troublemakers.
Yeah. Yeah, I travel with those guys quite a bit, and then Justin's been down here. Rachel and I are getting ready to go to Dallas for the Ultra. That'll be Rachel's first Ultra. Jess from Boise, Trisha from California, Leo. Those are generally all the ones that I've made travel trips with in the last year or 2 years.
Rachel, is that the one that did the death race?
Yep.
Rachel. Oh, what's her last name? I should know. She was on the podcast with me, but I'm horrible with names. But yeah.
What?
But she's never done an ultra, but she's done it in a Gogi and the death race. So.
Yeah, she just got back from Mongolia, a Gogi too. So she's got 2 Gogis and a death race. And she didn't want to do an ultra, and we kept talking about it. And then it was kind of like, okay, let's do this one. And I'm like, all right.
It's kind of one
and
of those
I wasn't sure.
I was going to say, not to sound bad, if you've already done an Agogi and the death race, you might as well go back and do the ultra.
Yeah, that's kind of what I told her. And I was okay with it because I wasn't sure how Tahoe was going to go. And I was like, oh, if Tahoe doesn't go well, like, I need to at least be ready to go to Dallas. And plus, they count as part of your trifecta. They count as a beast.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, well, I can still get my double and possibly triple. So
nice.
That'll be good. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so we're about an hour right now. So is there anything you want to say to the listeners in closing?
don't become stagnant. I think you asked kind of why I started doing this, and it stemmed from that 5K race, but it also was that like pivotal point, and I kind of touched on this earlier, where I was kind of looking for something to belong to and be a part of, because there's, you know, certain aspects of your life and expectations when you hit like certain mile markers in your life, when you're certain ages, like, hey, do you have a good job? You know, do you have a house? Yeah. Do you have a car? Do you have a family? You know, all these things. And when you get to that age, and maybe you have three or four of those things, but you don't have the seven things that you thought you were going to have, you start to look around like, well, what am I doing wrong? Or what do I do now? So I kind of was, this came at the perfect time for that. I said, I wish it was around 10 years ago. I wish I could be doing it when I was in my 20s. I'd probably be, you know, faster and stronger and more efficient, but I'm just thankful I can do it. I'm thankful I didn't screw my body up enough, and I know enough about like physical therapy and training aspects of it, because that's where my background is, and I've grown up with a bunch of athletic trainers, so I'm glad I pay attention to those things and I don't overdo things, and I'm just glad I can do it, and I'm glad it came when it did, because I think it was really kind of like a lifesaver. So yeah, don't become stagnant. If you're looking for something, find something. Go out and get it. Put yourself around good people. And I mean, we have tons of good people.
Yeah, we do.
Amazing group to be a part of.
Oh, it is. And I agree with the don't become stagnant. And that's one thing I love about the Beast, is that it's not just OCR. You have guys like Michael Sanchez, who's now suddenly getting into running and doing, you know, marathons and stuff like that. You got people who do marathons. You have people who do, you know, Patrick's pretty much talked me into doing a triathlon next year. yeah.
That ginger.
Yeah, that dang ginger. But so I'm going to do, it's going to be a sprint triathlon just to start with, because I'm, my problem with swimming, I'm a strong swimmer for about 20 feet and then I drowned. So I've got to get that endurance thing down. But that's what's great about this group. There's so many different, you know, there's the workouts, there's everything. I mean, it's, they've really built so that we have everything. You know, it kind of encompasses everybody. So, and I think it's just going to get better.
So. Yeah, I think we have more and more members, and I talked to other, you know, I'm friends with the Warrior State of Mind group, and I mean, all of us are from Colorado obstacle course racers, you know, people that are West Coast Spartans Street Team, all these different people, and it's like, people are really attracted to, like, our group and what our group does and the way that we interact with people. It draws people to us. So it just makes us bigger and bigger, and to touch more people and to get more people motivated and more people out there. So it's awesome.
Yeah. And I think, like I said, it's going to get better and better. I mean, they're putting people in the right places. They've got you, you know, in Idaho as the director, and I think you're going to do great things over there. You know, I'm not sure about the Washington directors, but whatever, you know, we'll touch on that later. But
they're fine.
Yeah, I know. You got Zane and Lorenzo down in Oregon. And I mean, I think it's really good. And I mean, you got the, now we're a nonprofit.
You know,
and that's coming together. I think there's a lot of great things coming. So perfect.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you for talking with me. It's been a blast.
Yes. Thanks for having me on.
She didn't have anything to, you know, give to the podcast, and she's given a great hour-long episode. So.
Thanks for taking me on.
Oh, yeah, anytime. So it was awesome, and I look forward to seeing you at the next race.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right. See you later.
See ya.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the BeastNet podcast, brought to you by Beast OCR. Don't forget to subscribe and let us know what you think and what you'd like to hear. You can find us on Facebook or at beastocr.com.